The WISE Awards are back for 2024 and early bird entries are still open. These awards recognise the best use of digital media, marketing and commerce, and they also celebrate innovation and expertise right across the digital marketing industry. There are more categories than ever before to enter, so visit exchangewire.com/events to find out more. The Mad Tech Podcast Special, focusing on the most important topics in ad tech and martech. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast. We have a very special edition this week called the Ad Tech Election Special. That's not elections for important people in the ad tech industry, listeners. We're going to be talking about the UK general election coming up in a couple of weeks' time and the implications that is going to have for the world of advertising and marketing. So I'm delighted to introduce two very special guests today who are going to help us plough through this topic. Stuart McNaughton, Head of Public Affairs and Sustainability at ISBAR. Morning, Stuart.
Good morning. Hello, everyone.
Thanks very much for coming on the podcast today. And we've got Chris Walker, Head of Policy and Government Affairs for the Advertising Association. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Rachel. Morning.
Great to have you both here. Right. So this is a meaty topic. I don't know if any of our listeners or the two of you have spent your week tuning into the Panorama specials, interviewing the leaders of the various political parties, but I feel like it has certainly been a week of talking about politics here in the UK. But we all know that government policy and regulation is having an enormous impact on the world of marketing and advertising. So I thought this would be a great opportunity to hear from the two of you who are very much more in the weeds of the impact of these government regulations and policies on those of us working in the advertising industry than we are here at ExchangeWire. And I wanted to pose a couple of very specific questions to you to help us understand the implications of the political landscape and what might happen over the coming weeks. So to get started, I'd like a perspective from both of you on some of the key pieces of legislation that were passed before Parliament was dissolved to prepare us for the election and the impact that they had or the relevance that they've got to the world of marketing and advertising. So to kick off on that one, Stu, let me come to you first and give us a bit of a rundown on some of the key pieces of legislation that you think are relevant for us.
Sure thing. Well, thanks, Rachel. And thanks for having us both on the podcast. It's great to be here. But it's been a busy few years with kind of a wide variety of legislation, and most of which was passed by the end of the Parliament. There's a period at the end just before a general election called the wash-up, where any final bits of legislation can kind of get fast-tracked before the general election is called and then Parliament is dissolved. But some of the key pieces for us in the last Parliament really were the Online Safety Act was a really big piece. We've done a lot of work with our brand advertiser members around online safety because brands have a massive vested interest in safe, well-regulated online environments where both their advertising can appear. They know it's appearing against kind of appropriate content, but also they know that their advertising revenue that funds a lot of the platforms is not funding kind of potentially, hosting of hateful content, whether that be kind of terrorism content or abusive content or anything that maybe is inappropriate for children and young people. So we've done a lot of work on the Online Safety Act, and we're really pleased that that was passed before the end of the Parliament. Another big one, actually, which did get through in the final stages in the wash-up, was the Media Bill, now the Media Act. That had some really key pieces in terms of Channel 4's future. People might remember that earlier, a few years ago, the government proposed or consulted on proposals to privatise and sell Channel 4, which is publicly owned. And they were looking at a few various different ownership models. Our members at the Trade Association, again, brand advertisers, were very much opposed to this because Channel 4 represents a great space on linear TV where they can reach what is generally a younger, more diverse audience, which is hard to reach through other broadcast channels on linear TV. And they felt that any kind of disruption to the ownership model could then change its public service broadcaster remit. And would then change programming and the audience that they could reach, which they really value. So we did a lot of work around that. The Media Act that then was passed didn't privatise Channel 4, but actually made some changes to its business model, which we welcomed, and we think puts Channel 4 in a good position for its long-term future around, for example, owning some of its own intellectual property and programming so that they can export it around the world. and puts it in a stable position in going forward. Also, really importantly, includes steps on regulating new on-demand platforms. We can all think of, you know, Netflix, Disney Plus, Paramount, Prime, other streaming services are available. But there's lots of new entrants into the market of on-demand streaming on-demand platforms that are now going to be brought under the regulation of Ofcom through the Media Act. And again, now that these new streaming services are bringing to market advertising-supported pricing models, again, it's really important for our members who may or may not, but they may want to advertise on these platforms to make sure that they're safe spaces, they're well regulated, and you know, a good ecosystem to advertise in. And then the last piece on that, I give time for Chris, but the last piece on that, also on the Media Act, is some provision for these on-demand streaming services of those quotas for the level of accessibility in their content that they have to have. So, for example, audio description, subtitling, and those sorts of things, which we've really welcomed. And it gives an initial quota for the first 2 years after the Act is passed, and then a higher level to encourage a greater transition after 4 years. So we really welcome that. But that's for the actual programming content. But obviously, at ISBA, we'll be working with our members to work on best practice in the industry. A lot of our members really want to also bring accessible content for their advertising to not only on-demand platforms, but widely. But yeah, it's a really positive step, we think.
That's a super interesting rundown of some of the kind of key issues that coming out in that bill that feel relevant to advertisers around TV and streaming services. We spent a lot of time talking about the sort of speed at which the TV marketplace for advertising is changing, the adoption of, you know, anything internet-based and the movements away from linear channels and linear TV, linear programming and consumption of linear content. It's really interesting to hear from your perspective at ISBA and therefore representing some of your brand members, the idea that they're thinking about this from the point of view of how they're reaching the audience and what type of audiences they're reaching and how regulation protects that and creates that environment. I think we've gotten sort of, you know, from an exchange wire point of view, from an ad tech point of view, we've gotten obsessed with the kind of execution of advertising on those platforms. Sometimes means that we don't really focus very much on what the user experience is like or how brands might be thinking about that from the perspective of what type of audience they're trying to reach. So you've raised some really interesting things that I hope are going to potentially create an environment because some of this legislation will relate to other streaming providers or other broadcasters and streaming providers. Hopefully it's going to create a TV environment that's very familiar to the linear environment that we've all grown up with, which is well kind of protected, good quality content that, you know, and when you're tuning into certain broadcasters, you know what to expect. Channel 4's always had a reputation for bringing forward sort of edgy, youth-inspired content. And it's really interesting to hear that regulation is trying to kind of keep pace with that. Is that what it feels like from your point of view?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, in a sense that, yes, it's been really rapidly changing, lots of new formats coming available and lots of new, as I said, on-demand platforms, but then also social media platforms. And it really has been necessary for regulation, both in terms of the legislation that's being passed through Parliament and then the work that's being done through Ofcom and then for the advertising industry specifically, the Advertising Standards Authority, the ASA, really to keep a pace with some of that really rapid change. And I think we're getting there. I mean, we'll come on to talk about this, but I think there's also then going to be further steps in the next parliament of whichever party is elected to go even further and keep a pace, because even now there's more challenges coming down the line.
Yeah, understood. Chris, what happened in the wash-up that feels very relevant to your members in the Advertising Association, and maybe some comments on some of the things that that Stu noted from an ISBA point of view?
Yeah, thanks, Rachel. I'll probably take the opposite approach of Stu and unfortunately have to talk about some of the things that didn't quite make it through. They were so close, but there's always some things that don't quite get the airtime. So the data bill was a big one for us and obviously for the industry, you know, with about 75, 76% of ad spend now online. Everything around data is such a hot topic, and we were very, very close to seeing that get through the wash up. That would have done things like preserve data adequacy with the EU, would have done some stuff around balancing consent and legitimate interests, which, you know, in the original GDPR wasn't quite up to scratch. And then clarifying some aspects of GDPR just to make them a little bit more business friendly whilst maintaining those consumer protections. So it was a shame not to see those through. Having looked through the manifestos, I haven't seen a commitment to necessarily bring the bill back in its existing form pre-wash-up. But that's obviously something that we'll be engaging with the government on, of whatever shade it is after the 4th of July, just to make sure that's kind of high up on their agenda, because that was a really, really key thing for us. And I think the other main thing, which has probably slipped under the wire, apart from for people like Stu and I who've had to engage on the nitty-gritty of a lot of these issues, is around something called secondary regulation, which is whenever you've got your first bit of legislation, which in this case was the Health and Social Care Act, back in 2022. And then there is secondary regulation, which is just kind of washing up bits that weren't quite specified in the act. And that was particularly around what was previously known as high fat salt sugar foods, HFSS, now is less healthy foods. And without wanting to get into too much of the technicalities on the podcast and bore listeners too much, but there were some really, really important stuff there on the secondary regulations around the products that would be in scope of those restrictions, a couple of definitions around what those restrictions would actually mean in terms of what is a less healthy food product, which we were really hoping we were going to see before a general election. We've been doing a lot of work on, but we're now going to have to wait until after the election period to see. You know, as an industry, we're still doing a lot of work to prepare for the incoming regulations, because they are still meant to come in October 2025. So obviously that clock is ticking down, which is why it was such an important thing for us to try and push through pre-wash-up. But yeah, again, it'll be high on the agenda of any engagement we're doing with the new government after the 4th.
And you raise a really interesting point there, Chris, which is this position that it then puts you in as an organisation and association and maybe some of your interested members of wanting to see some legislative change, or at least wanting some certainty around legislative controls, not getting that. And then what impact does that actually have on some of your members? So I want to liken this a little bit to the industry grappling with, you know, big topics such as deprecation of third-party cookies. It feels like everybody gets sort of worked up towards a particular deadline. We now know that, you know, that deadline's becoming ever more elusive. Google has rode back from it, you know, officially twice, sort of unofficially three times. And it sort of puts some people within the industry in a state of limbo. Is it a similar sort of scenario with these more specific technical elements of, you know, what will be part of people's advertising campaigns? Or are your members just proceeding with, I suppose, adhering to general guidance, to what they expect is going to come out in some of these legislative controls, and getting on with things? How does it impact your members is the short version of my question.
Yeah, I mean, it is a really good question, and unfortunately it does have a massive impact. Whilst it is, you know, very technical and you're getting into the policy detail of what does a specific word mean in a specific document, and I don't blame listeners for wanting to switch you off and not want to engage that, but that's what they're looking to Stu and I to do in our day-to-day lives. It is really, really important, because these definitions can mean the difference between one product being in scope of the regulations and one product not being, or one specific variation of a product, for example, is kind of getting down to that level of technicality. And if you're now in a position, we know that people are planning for Christmas 2025 campaigns already for their products. You know, it's impossible to plan properly for something whenever you haven't got the guidance, you haven't got those regulations in place, you don't actually know. You can assume that your product's going to be in scope, but it may well not be. Or you could be assuming that some of your products are not going to be in scope, and they may well end up in scope. And then you're getting down to the technical detail of, you know, what can you include in an advert, what can you not, what is going to be caught up in regulations that we haven't got that yet. So yeah, it does have a really big impact on brands, as Stu will be talking about, you know, agencies as well, who are trying to do the work behind the scenes, but also media owners, because they don't know what kind of advertising they're going to be able to get that far ahead. So yeah, it's a real full ecosystem problem.
Yeah. Knock on impact. Go on, Stu.
I was going to say, this has been a really, really big issue for a lot of our members who are food and drink brands. That, I mean, for months, as Chris says, we've been really urging the government to pass these secondary regulations before a general election that we all knew was coming at some point this year. But it's not the case. It's kind of just a deadline that's keep keeps getting sort of kicked into the long grass. This is having, as Chris says, an impact now. And you've got some brands that are planning their advertising campaigns for 2025 now. And they've got such lead-in times. They've got new product development. You know, they're working across understanding what these regulations mean, not just in terms of, as Chris says, you know, what types of products are in scope, but also what types of media formats maybe are in scope. It's really having a big effect. So, I mean, business really wants to play its part in tackling obesity and health problems facing the UK. And our members really want to be kind of working in partnership with government to really achieve, yeah, the shared outcomes that we all want to see. But they really need that clarity and that certainty. So we really do hope that, you know, whoever is in number 10 and whichever party is in government, that this is at the top of their in tray when they get into office.
It's hard to imagine a world where it wouldn't be, because, like you said, it has such a, you know, massive impact on society at large. And we know that, you know, underscoring all of this are the health principles of trying to promote and support healthy lifestyles, trying to prevent, you know, long-term illnesses, diseases, et cetera. But just before we move, because I want to move on to, the impact on the industry beyond the 4th of July and what the major parties are saying they will and won't do when they get into power, should they get into power. But before I move on to that, I think that topic is really interesting to reflect on from an industry-wide point of view, because it's the knock-on impact to other parts of the industry as well. So this is a big problem for advertisers, a big problem for members of both of your associations, but then it also becomes a problem for agencies who are trying to grapple with budgets, volumes of budgets, where budgets are being directed, the execution of campaigns, what type of expertise they have working on various campaigns. That then has a knock-on impact if it's, we're talking about advertising formats, to potentially what technical tools you're using to execute advertising and marketing within those formats. And, you know, it just reminds you how much of this is all linked. And, it'd be great to see some resolution. I also feel like the data bill has got to be, you know, it's really interesting to hear you say, Chris, that there's no indication of where that might be on the priority of legislation beyond July 4th, but how can it not be a priority? Anyway, you guys know more than I do. Let's get on to what's coming forward in the manifestos of the major parties. So we're talking here about the Labour Party and the Tory Party, and I guess you might throw something in from the Liberal Democrats. What's coming through in their manifestos that you think is going to have an impact on advertisers and thereby the rest of the industry? Chris, I'm going to start with you.
Yeah. And I mean, it's going to be it's already been a very exciting campaign in many ways, because whilst if the polls stay as they are, we're going to see a huge change in the government, potentially a massive majority. And what does that bring? So the big question is, yes, what's in the manifestos, but also what is not in the manifestos, which could get picked up. You know, if you have a Labour government which has got a majority of 20, it's very different to a Labour government that's got a majority of 120 or 220, even as some polls might be predicting. So, you know, if they've got a lot of backbenchers who do not have government roles and are looking for something which they can kind of put their name to and they can champion to try and get either a media profile or a bigger profile within the party, that's not actually necessarily something which is going to come from the manifesto. They'll try and find something which is unique to them, which will be a campaign that they can really get behind. Stu and I will always be working hard to make sure it's something which is pro the advertising industry, but there'll be a huge amount of churn as well. Having so many new MPs come in, regardless of who wins, you know, so many MPs have stood down pre-election. There's going to be a huge amount of education that we're going to have to do as trade bodies about what advertising actually is. You know, it's very easy for us all to forget that, you know, we're working on advertising day in, day out. For most people, they don't actually think about advertising apart from what they see on TV or billboards or online. And we have to educate them about what we can do. So to actually get to your question, rather than skirting around it, the manifestos, they've got some really interesting stuff in there, obviously around economic growth. So there'll be a big question about how do we pivot in a way the discussions we have around advertising. Obviously, we have really good creative discussions around, we're a vital part of the creative industries, funding the arts and culture sector. But I think there's a really important message for us to get out that actually we are a huge part of the UK's economic success. You know, £36 billion industry, over £15 billion worth of exports. And landing that message will be crucial, because there's so much of a focus on economic growth in all the manifestos. But also what we can do around public services, particularly around public health, especially when we're looking at the Labour document. That's such a huge part of what they're putting in. They've got some very interesting ideas about what they want to do, as are the Conservatives, but obviously we know a lot of that already because they've been working on it for the last 14 years. So it'll be, what can we do to show that advertising can A, support achieving those public health initiatives, but also changing consumer mindset. You know, you've had incredible campaigns recently from ITV around mental health, breast cancer awareness, campaigns from other sectors, showcasing that side of advertising, which isn't always thought about, and really showing how our sector can lean into a lot of the priorities that are in the manifestos. So I think, you know, those two things, economy and public health and public change, are the two things I'm looking for.
Yeah. Stu, interested in your point of view on this as well. And just as we're chatting away, like you said, I mean, we're not necessarily getting into election prediction territory, but it feels as though there's a small chance of a hung parliament, a very small chance of a hung parliament, that we're actually likely to see a majority and potentially a significant majority. But any views on what you think might happen if there were a hung parliament, and if there's any, you know, because you pointed there, Chris, to what it might look like if Labour were to have, if Labour were to be elected and have a huge majority, that gives them a lot of power to push through legislation in certain ways. But it also, like you said, means that there will be lots of backbenchers looking to get into special interest areas. What if there's a hung parliament? So I'll come back to you on that in a second, Chris. Let's go to you, Stu. What's important from an ISBA point of view, and what are your wider views?
In terms of if there's a hung parliament?
Yeah.
Interesting question, really. I mean, I don't think there's been a huge amount of analysis or kind of people looking really at hung parliament. I mean, because of where the polls are. I mean, that's not exactly, you know, just my view of what the prediction of what might happen in this election. That's what the polls are saying. So I think a hung parliament is very very unlikely, and I think certainly that if you're looking at the parties who could potentially go into a coalition agreement with one of the larger parties, you're probably looking at the Liberal Democrats. And I think given their experience of coalition last time around and the long-term effects that's had on them as a political party in the UK, I think they would be very, very hesitant to wish to go into another kind of formal coalition. So I think that is, yeah, vanishingly a kind of small percentage unlikely. It's a really interesting kind of question, though. But yeah, I think that's unlikely. I think if the Liberal Democrats were to go into coalition, it certainly probably wouldn't be with the Conservatives, because they wouldn't want to...
It went badly for them last time.
Yeah, they wouldn't want a repeat of previous experience. And if they were to go into coalition with the Labour government, I think probably it would have a very high price, probably something like switching to a proportional vote
representation
voting
system. Yeah.
So we will see. But I think, yeah, I agree with, just to build on what Chris was saying there, I think it's exactly right that it's not necessarily just what's in the manifestos, because actually both of the manifestos are quite similar in what they specifically talk about in terms of advertising. You know, both include policies around tobacco and vape advertising. We don't know if that will necessarily be exactly the same as what the government were looking to pass in their tobacco and vapes bill, but both certainly looking to restrict vaping advertising to children and young people. Both talk about advertising of high fat, sugar and salt food and drink products, and wanting to regulate on those. Interestingly, there's not a huge degree of difference in the actual manifestos, but I think certainly one issue that is not in there is AI. We know that for the Conservatives and for Rishi Sunak, AI is a huge personal policy issue of interest for him. He obviously held an AI summit of world leaders at Bletchley Park not that long ago. And I do understand from talking to people inside the Labour Party that for the DCMS team within Labour, one of their higher priorities of first coming into government is to bring forward an AI piece of legislation. And we've seen there's been the EU AI Act that has been passed within the European Union, which is a very comprehensive and a large piece of legislation. I don't know if that necessarily is an indication of where a Labour government might go, but it does give us a sense and a flavour of some of those some of those issues that might be looked at, for example, around the usage of AI, around the transparency of it for consumers or for an advertising audience, about data usage, about intellectual property. So I think that's certainly one that's not in the manifestos, but could be a really, really big one for the advertising industry going forward.
Yeah. And you think it's not in the manifestos just because they were wanting to get other issues a bit more front and center? Or do you think that, from a government point of view, despite Rishi Sunak's, sort of recent seminar that he held, do you think there's a bit of reluctance to come forward and speak explicitly about how they intend to tackle it, because it's still very unknown? It feels like the early days of adoption in terms of artificial intelligence tools in lots of areas.
I think it's just more about wanting to have a retail offer for your for voters, really, and something that is going to be really
meaningful to them,
hitting the key issues that people really vote on, to be honest. And at the moment, that's cost of living, that's economy, that's being able to see a GP or see an NHS dentist, and some of the how people feel about the schools that their kids go to and those sorts of things, the potholes on roads and those sorts of things. So that's not to say I don't think it's at the forefront of the mind of policy, people developing policy in a future government. But I think they probably just want to talk about at the moment during a general election campaign, talk about the kind of bread and butter issues that people are really going to base their vote on.
Yeah. Things that are going to mean that people will turn up at the polls and make a choice.
Exactly.
Chris, wanting to just get back to your point about economic growth as well, I found that really interesting, some of those stats you just shared with us as well. I think there's a tendency, particularly on the tech side of advertising and marketing at the moment, to get a little bit, to feel as though there's a lot of consolidation on the technical side of the industry. There's also a lot of uncertainty, again, connected to, movements and decisions that some of the large tech platforms are taking that's having a big impact throughout the industry. Also connected sometimes to some of this uncertainty that is being brought up in some of these pieces of legislations and potential bills going forward. But going back to emphasising your point about economic growth, I feel as though that's something that we could do with emphasising a lot more, particularly in the trade press, in marketing and advertising, because we have a tendency to just sort of cut straight to the bad stories and straight to the stuff that gets people anxious and keeps them up at night. Do you feel that this is something that your members feel really strongly about? Do they feel like, this is a big, it's not just about their own individual businesses, but it's also about the contribution, the greater contribution to economic growth? And is it an issue that you find really easy to engage with brands on?
Yeah, I think across the advertising ecosystem, everyone's always keen to talk about, as with any business, how successful you're being. And obviously, we've seen problems across the advertising world in recent years, so I'm not going to pretend that everything's rosy. But whenever you look at the sort of overarching, the growth pattern, it has been a really strong trajectory, particularly in comparison to the rest of the UK economy. And I think there's kind of, going back to what I was talking about earlier around the creative industries, we have generally been lumped in with the creative sector for a long time for completely valid and understandable reasons. And we are obviously a huge creative industry. But I think in some ways that's limited our appeal with government. I think whenever we're lumped in with other sectors like theatre and music and film, which are related in a way, but very, very different in terms of what they're asking for. There's a lot more of a reliance around tax credits, for example. A lot of their discussions with government are much more about funding arrangements, and those are not conversations that, as an industry, we generally have to have. So we are actually in a position where, because of the success we've had, especially over the last 5 to 10 years in that growth, presenting ourselves as, yes, really important creative side, but actually we're an economic powerhouse. If you look at the way the government talk about manufacturing, for example, which is relative to advertising, a small industry in this country now, but anytime that advertising is under threat manufacturing is under threat, or anytime something comes out that's negative about manufacturing, politicians are scrambling over themselves to talk about it. Whereas you don't see that with other aspects of the economy that are sort of the newer economy, I would say. I think that goes back to what Stu and I were saying at the start around politicians just don't really understand advertising. We're a bit of a strange sector, but in the same way that they don't understand a lot of tech issues, for example, or they don't have a background in a lot of these new and upcoming economies. And that's not a criticism, because It's impossible to know everything about everything. But it just means that the challenge with a new parliament is going to be that much greater. And in the first 6 months to 12 months, it's going to be us going in and constantly just reaffirming the message that, yes, we are a really important part of the creative sector. But if you want to get economic growth, you have to look to the industries that are growing. And absolutely, advertising is one of the few ones that is. Yeah. So it'll be a really, really important part of our retail offer.
That's such a powerful message. Yeah, go on, Stu.
I was just saying, I fully agree with Chris. But and the other thing, actually, I'll say is it's obviously the advertising industry is growing, but growing across the country. And I think for whichever party is in government, whether it's Labour or Conservative, I mean, you've got obviously a huge base for the advertising industry in London, but also up in Salford, up in Manchester, you've got kind of now Channel 4's moved to Leeds. There's a big hub for creative industries and advertising growing up around Leeds. There's Glasgow and Edinburgh, Bristol, you know, so all around the country, you know, Brighton, there's all around the country, there's a real footprint for the advertising industry that is delivering economic growth and jobs in those communities. So yeah, I think we've got a really, really strong story to tell, as Chris says.
Yeah, absolutely. Strong platform for developing relationships with incoming politicians and for, you know, also developing a lobbying base. So that's going to be my sort of final question for you guys. To what extent, obviously within each of your industry associations, there's a hell of a lot of work that goes on between you and various members that get interested in these ideas and these topics. But, you know, do you ever feel like you need more support from industry? Are there other issues and matters that you get involved in that you want to lobby on, that you want an even stronger voice from industry players? And are there things that we can do to sort of help get the messages out there for you?
Yeah, I can kick off. I mean, I think that obviously we get incredible support from all of our members, and we have a lot of discussions around various policy issues, which we're always engaged in. I think if there is something I would look to the industry to talk more about, it's picking up on that piece that Stu was just saying there around the impact that we have outside of London. I think it's about 57% of the industry is employed outside of the M25. And yet a lot of our conversations are always London focused for understandable reasons. But we really have to get the message out there about growing outside of London, but also as trade associations, we need to get the understanding from people who are out in Manchester, Leeds, Edinburgh, Glasgow, Bristol, getting that feedback about what are the things that we can do that will help grow your businesses and help establish you as even firmer bases in those cities and further afield if you want to expand. So I think that's the key thing for me. You know, what can we do over the next 5 years with the new government to ensure that you're getting the investment outside of London that you need?
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, I think I'd say that actually I agree with everything that Chris has said, but I mean, our membership also are very active in a lot of the policy issues that we're really talking about and do actually really, really want to work in partnership and in collaboration with government on some of these big public policy challenges, whether it be around food and drink advertising, whether it be around online safety and the safety of children in online spaces or vulnerable people online, or whether it be around, for example, something else that I'm working on, as you mentioned at the top, Rachel, around sustainability and net zero and the role that advertising can play in helping shift consumer behavior towards more sustainable either purchasing choices or behavioral choices, you know, things like recycling and that sort of stuff. There's some really, really good projects going on. But I think the political instability that has been over the last few years, well, even longer, you know, not just a few years, but on all sides of the House of Commons, the political instability that has been, I think that whoever is in number 10 after the next election, our members certainly will really be wanting to get some stability, but then wanting to work in partnership and collaboration to work on these challenges together.
Yeah. Well, we'd really like to support you, to the things that both of you have mentioned there to really, to really sort of elevate those messages across the industry and to make sure that we're doing what we can to kind of work together with government and to also push that really important message you mentioned, Chris, that the advertising industry in the UK is not just in London and it exists elsewhere as well. Some of the things that we're really passionate about, of course, is the economic growth piece, but right from the inception of some of the tech tools and solutions that we spent a lot of time talking about at ExchangeWise, so early days of programmatic media trading, we talked incessantly about how, very few people outside of those actually executing that type of activity understood what that meant, what it did, what impact it had on advertising, what impact it had on people's digital and online experiences. And I feel like the world has changed significantly in the intervening 12 years. It would be great to make sure that that's reflected in all of these conversations and that we're having really, serious, robust, good quality conversations with government and, you know, presenting ourselves as the, like you mentioned, powerhouse industry that we are. I'm going to have to wrap it up there, guys. Thank you so much for joining me. This has been a real education. And I'm sure that you've enlightened a lot of our MadTech podcast listeners on some things that they didn't know an awful lot about, but feel very relevant to their day-to-day lives. I'd love to catch up with the both of you post-election once we know what's happened and we can get a bit of a read on what we think might be coming forward. So maybe a couple of months after the 4th of July. And look forward to reconnecting with you. Thanks very much for joining me.
Thanks, Rachel.
Thanks, everyone. And that was this week's MadTech podcast.